Hey, it's the NFL Wild Card Review and Monday Night Football Preview. Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Shots into Near NFL Podcast for Monday, January 12th, 2026. I'm Aaron Schatz. You know me as the DVOA guy from FTN Fantasy. He's Mike Tenier. You know him from his Substack at miketenier.substack.com. If you are watching us live, we will take your questions and comments about a wild card weekend, and we are going to go in backwards order here, starting with the Chargers, Patriots, and working backwards. Mike's team is no longer in the playoffs. I don't know if I should say mercifully no longer in the playoffs. My team is still alive. It was a mostly great weekend, four really good games. And one that required you to really like defense, and then one team pulled away, and that was the end of that. So let's take about that game first, which is the Patriots and Jaguars. Patriots and Chargers, sorry. This one had a 98% post-game win expectancy for the Patriots.
Not surprising.
And they dominated by the yards. Some fumbles and some fumble recoveries and some fumbles that could have been recovered made it look like the game was closer.
And an interception at the goal, you know, at the goal.
And the interception at the goal. But it was like the yard until that last Chargers drive, the yardage difference was something like 370 to 140.
Right. Although I think if you did it at halftime, it probably was a little bit different.
It was a little closer at halftime when it was 6-3. I was surprised that the Chargers offense was so bad. Like, we knew they were bad, but they weren't 3 points bad for most of the year. They were really bad. And I'll let you go off, but it's not just the line. Like, even when Herbert got protection, he was not hitting his guys. And there was no running game.
Right. And, of course, we all saw the offensive line. It was that bad. We know about Greg Roman, etc. It's not like the Chargers defense handed Justin Herbert the ball at the 3-yard line or anything like that. Oh, wait, that exactly did happen. He was given the ball at the 3-yard line and was unable to put the ball in the first quarter. You can blame Harbaugh for the drive that ends at the 2-yard line before halftime, where Harbaugh gets cold feet and kicks a field goal. A lot of people to blame on the Chargers side, including the quarterback, who once again failed to get it done, failed to get anything done, not it done. We're not talking about 16-13 and six sacks. We're talking about not being able to move the ball at all after halftime.
Yeah, none of the turnovers in this game led to points.
That's right.
Which is sort of interesting. And the turnover that wasn't, the Herbert sack fumble that Kamani Vidal picked up and advanced 13 yards, also did not lead to points.
That was like the second longest play from scrimmage for the Chargers was the play where Herbert heroically fumbled the ball and the running back picked it up.
Yes. Bowl 32 says Hurts is greater than Herbert.
Yes.
We'll get into Hurts in a little bit. D safety guy wants to know, is post game win expectancy a rolling in game stat or is it calculated post game? I only calculated post game, but I suppose you can do it in game too. I mean, you could.
And there's win probabilities in game that you can find if you want to look stuff like that up.
Right. It's different than in game win probability because it's like how much like should the probability of how well they've played so far. Right. The main goal of PGWE was always to figure out the sort of wrong team wins games.
Yes.
And I'll point out, we'll get to this with Bears and Packers. It's meant to be backward looking, not forward looking. There are other people on the web like Kevin Cole does these adjusted scores that filter out things like special teams and penalties because they're less predictive.
Right.
Post-game win expectancy absolutely includes those things because it's not meant to be predictive. It's meant to be backwards looking.
Right. Was this a fluke? And whatever happened yesterday, that wasn't a fluke.
Right. Nothing was a fluke. We'll do them for each game, but the only one was 50-50 was Jaguars and Bills.
50-50 game.
Big Cheese 77 says, we have seen Herbert doing amazing things by Collinsworth was the most laughably bad line of the day.
We see the signature highlight of the week all the time. He does do amazing things, but he is now tied, as we were saying off camera, for the on the playoff, all-time playoff passing touchdown list. He is now tied with Juwan Jennings, the wide receiver of the 49ers, who threw his second postseason touchdown yesterday. Herbert also has two in six seasons as an NFL quarterback.
Mike Tallis wants to know, after watching the Patriots force pressure, are the Steelers the tougher matchup for the Patriots because they have the better offensive line? I don't think so. Because one thing I pointed out during the game was all the schedule talk about May. Drake May has not faced any of the top eight pass defenses of the year by DVOA. So the Chargers were number 10. This was the second hardest pass defense that he faced all year by DVOA, and he didn't have his best game passing. He had a really good game scrambling and that option play. That was fun. But he didn't have a great game pass. So you're like, oh, my God, if he has to face the Texans, he has not. He honestly has not faced a pass defense as hard as the Texans.
Yeah, and nor have the rookies on the offensive line faced a pass rush like that. If we want to take it away from
Jacob that. Jacob Wilson was not good. Will Campbell was not that great in this game.
Right. You know, Kayshon Boutte has not had to get open over as against cornerbacks in general as good as the ones they faced.
Yeah. I also thought Drake was a little careless with the ball on sacks, and which seems to be a little bit of an issue for him. The sack fumble that he had was a second and 10 on the Chargers 18. Yeah. He was kind of careless with it. That's something he needs to work on.
He had one at the end of the game where I think Wilson passed on it, and the game was kind of over by then. But that, you know, 16-3, 8 minutes left or whatever, that could have been a momentum changer, got away with it.
All right, let's go backwards a game and talk about the Eagles and the 49ers. 49ers 23, Eagles 19. 49ers had a 60% post-game win expectancy. Big Cheese says, sorry for the Eagles' loss, Mike. I really wanted them to come to Chicago so we could beat them again.
Can I interest you in a freezing cold Matthew Stafford? That could be fun. Enjoy that.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. But so the Eagles' season, you know, was really interesting. It's, you know, for me, the whole Eagles season has been through the prism of my preseason projections, right? Where I was wrong about Washington.
Well, yeah.
But right about the Eagles.
Right.
It's very funny to me that Eagles fans pulled this, like, gigantic, like, parade, like, winning rally about how awesomely wrong I was about the Eagles. And I'm like, you guys are not happy about this season. Don't pretend like you're happy about this season, right? Like, don't pretend that, please.
You're tapped into, I think I know, like the dozen very specific hobby horse people are like, you were wrong about the Commanders. Like, Jaden Daniels got hurt in week two, guys. Like, right. Like, these things happen. But you're right, because everything that you said in the predictions, a little bit of brain drain, coordinator-wise, a little bit regression to the mean, et cetera, happens precisely the way you did it. You suggested, just in a very dramatic and infuriating to watch way.
Yes. E-Dog, the big dog, says, do any Eagles fans not looking for attention actually want A.J. Brown traded? I don't want the dead cap burden.
This morning, after yesterday, after he fails to make the kind of catches you pay A.J. Brown to make,
yes,
including with the game on the line late, including going to the sidelines and just getting into it with Nick Sirianni after not making a play. Let's not call it a drop on a catchable ball. You can see wanting him traded, but yeah, there's obviously the cap hit, the reality of what that even looks like. Let people be a little mad for a little while here.
Matthew Carley says, this season's Niners are like the Spartans at Thermopylae. It's a great run, but final victory is impossible. This level of injury cannot be overcome. And, of course, they lost
Kittle,
George Kittle, to a torn Achilles.
Yeah.
Which they overcame with a good amount of use check, and Tonjes is a good receiver.
Yes.
But, yeah, they're really hurt. And the fact that they won this game is a testament to good coaching from Shanahan and Saleh. Although, unfortunately, I was downstairs in the press box eating dinner when this happened, but I wanted to put out a post. If you're Brock Purdy, is your best choice really to throw to Sky Moore being covered by Quinyon Mitchell? Is that the combo you want of receiver and defender? Because I would say I would want to go somewhere else on the field from the moment the ball was snapped. I would be looking to go somewhere else, and that was a pick.
Adoree Jackson's covering somebody. Just go there.
That's not George Kittle being covered by Quinyon Mitchell. That's Sky Moore. Moore being covered by Quinyon Mitchell.
That's Sky Moore, who is likely to catch the ball and hand it to Mitchell based on some of his career lowlights to date. But Purdy managed the game well at the end with those late drives after making those mistakes. He played very well early in the game. He's a better quarterback than Justin Herbert. I can't imagine anybody arguing otherwise at this point. But you're right. They're running out of dudes.
The Niners, I can imagine people arguing otherwise.
Well, they should be laughed off the internet as clowns. It's silly. It's silly at this point. Purdy go out. Yes, so two interceptions, but managing that game against that defense while your boy was out there like tripping and falling. Oh, no, a pass rush. What do I do? Come on.
I thought the Eagles giving up on the run at the end of the game was actually a good decision. They sort of gave up on the run, but then Brown dropped that ball and then the fourth down into traffic at the end. But I thought that it was actually better once they had to go to just passing.
It was better when they went to tempo and actually were getting the snaps off quickly. And Brady was talking about it, and I got friends who've been talking about it for weeks, going up to the line and spending 20 seconds like giving instructions at the line that the defense is just looking at. It's like, this is not, you're not fooling us with adjustments and motion here. You're just like wasting time, and we're watching you guys like confuse yourselves.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the Eagles in the offseason. I was surprised that you suggested Lane Johnson might be on the way out, because I figure like once he's healthy, he's Lane Johnson.
We're trying to figure out how enthusiastic he is right now.
Oh,
yeah.
In other words, was he maybe healthy and just enthusiastic?
Right, I can't imagine him dogging it, and yet just the way this has all played out in the last couple of weeks, waiting for him during the season, the amount of times it's like, second half, I can't go, but I'm not in the trainer's room either. I'm just kind of sitting here. Like, there's a weird vibe there.
All right, we'll go to the 1 o'clock game, which was Bills 27, Jaguars 24. Yeah. This was the one where the post-game win expectancy was basically 50-50. I know it was the Josh Allen show. I would like to point out, Josh Allen does have help. He does have James Cook, and he's got a good offensive line.
Compared to Justin Herbert.
Not just the Josh Allen show, but he's amazing.
It feels that way, though.
Yeah, it feels that way sometimes because the receivers are not great.
Not great by any means.
And I'm not so sure that the play calling is as good as you would like it to be, and the defense has problems. Although they made the big play at the end. The pass defense for the Bills this year was actually slightly above average. Their run defense is horrible. I don't know why the Jaguars moved away from the run after a little bit early on. It didn't make sense. The only theory I saw online that made sense was that Trevor Lawrence was getting pass looks and was audibling to pass plays because the Bills were stuffing the box. But if the Bills are stuffing the box, run anyway.
Right. Right. They have trouble running the ball. And that's where Liam Cohen can take you aside and say, even if you get the look, let's do it this way right now. Let's make them stop it. And then we'll make the adjustment.
I thought the Bills tight ends did a good job of getting open against Jaguars zones.
Yeah.
That was a weakness for the Jaguars this year. Do you think Big Chief says, I had the Jaguars winning it all, but I'm not sure the Bills can do it, but they certainly impressed me. I do think the Bills can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I can foresee a game where the Bills – first of all, the way the AFC is even, it's not hard to see the Bills making it to the Super Bowl.
Correct.
I can foresee a game where Allen just goes nuts and they overcome the Rams or Seahawks.
Yes.
But I don't think it's likely.
Right. It's more envisionable because we've seen them in these big games and we've seen him do that than some of the other things we have to envision right now, like Bo Nix going out there and like going ham to beat an opponent.
But the Jaguars, I think, are in a good place. I think this is in a better place than some of the past Jaguars teams because they have the quarterback. We're not trying to convince ourselves that Blake Bortles can lead a team built on defense. You know, they've got the quarterback. In fact, my friend Ethan Hammerman suggested on Blue Sky that they trade Brian Thomas because Parker Washington has really emerged, and they gave a big contract to Jacoby Myers, and they're going to get Travis Hunter back. And he suggested sending Brian Thomas to the Patriots for their first-round pick, which I thought was kind of interesting.
You're not going to get a first-round pick for Brian Thomas. Everyone saw this season. Everyone watched this
season. Yeah, this season was sort of iffy with the drops, but the guy has a lot of talent.
You need to find that sort of sucker GM. He is the kind of guy that teams will take, and it's like, oh, the uber talent, let's build around him. We don't care if he drops passes and has focus issues. You can find a taker. I don't think that's a terrible idea at all. Maybe you can get a pick. Maybe you can keep rebuilding in other places on the roster.
Buddy and George says, the Giants winning and going from 1 to 5 was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. Last year, the Patriots won and went from 1 to 4. Mm-hmm. This happens all the time. You cannot tell a team to lose.
Right.
NFL players do not want to lose. Right. NFL coaches do not want to lose. Right. There is no reason for Mike Kafka to try to lose that game. He is not going to be in New York next year.
Right.
He wants to look good. Those players want to look good.
Yes.
You would have to fire the coach, put the GM on the sideline, and then rest all your best players, and then the league would come down on you. You can't lose on purpose. It just doesn't work that way.
Right. And the veterans in the locker room would be screaming on every podcast they could get on about what happened and how they were denied their opportunity to get their next contract to demonstrate. Jackson Dart wants to demonstrate who he can be. He wants to go out there. He was still slamming his head into things, which is not advisable, but that's kind of who he is. That's your best case scenario, is everybody trying to win. And you're right. Kafka wants to be the Chiefs or offensive coordinator next year or whatever. He's maybe the Eagles offensive coordinator. Okay. He wants to get out there and put good things on film, as did every young player on that field.
And I was talking to some other people about this actually at the Patriots game last week. The Giants are the most likely team to take the leap next year.
If everyone gets healthy at once.
Because Dart was good. Mm-hmm. Shows promise. Malik Neighbors will be back. Mm-hmm. They have a high draft pick. It's not number one, but they have a high draft pick.
Right.
They have the pass rushers.
Defensive line.
They're going to get a new head coach. If they do a good head coach hire, that's the team most likely to take the leap, like the Patriots and Jaguars did.
They have a left tackle. So, and the line wasn't as bad as it has been in past years. It wasn't great, but whatever. You get an extra lineman, get a cornerback. Scataboo comes back, so they've got a running back rotation. It's conceivable. Let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks, but it's conceivable.
Bears 31, Packers 27. Post-game win expectancy, surprisingly, Bears 74%, because the Bears dominated on special teams and had only 2 penalties where the Packers had 8. Now, those things are not predictive of the future, but it doesn't matter because the Packers are out.
Right. And what I pointed out a couple times today and in my piece, if the fourth down decisions go differently or get replaced with like a field goal and a punt, we're not talking about an epic collapse. We're probably talking about the Packers leading 14-10 or 17-10 at halftime rather than the Bears handing them the ball.
The Bears win by 2 scores.
Right. The Bears win by 2 scores, and there wasn't this big comeback. It was like, well, they took care of their business throughout that game, as opposed to here's the ball.
Went on fourth down, by the way, when models said to kick.
Exactly. Like the one at like the 35-yard line in the first half. What, I mean, like, seriously, what is that?
I didn't write many notes on this game because I felt a little bit like the guy in the old Memorex ad. I realize I'm totally dating myself, but remember where he was watching TV and he's like totally blown away by whatever's coming out of his television. That's what the second half of this game was like for me. So I didn't write a lot of notes. The Bears defense was night and day between the first half and the second half. And the Packers offensive line completely disintegrated in the second half of this game.
And the special teams disintegrated. I think that was Maxell, by the way. Somebody can write in and let us know who had that ad. Was it Maxell?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Was it Maxell or Memorex?
I think it's Maxell. You're right.
Here's the thought I had walking the dog this morning. In the fourth quarter, if Jordan Love had, hurt his pinky and Malik Willis came in, the Packers probably win. Because LaFleur would have brought out his RPOs and read options and everything else like that in the fourth quarter. And instead of firing the ball downfield late in that game, would have put together his clever ball control offense and won that game. So this is not an indictment of Love or LaFleur or anybody else, but it's a matter of how weird it is when the Packers find these ways to self-sabotage themselves.
Love was very good in this game.
Oh, yes.
Love was much better than Caleb Williams by DYAR. The Bears' advantage was the running game was better. Mm-hmm. Packers' running game was pretty bad.
Right.
And the special teams.
The special teams, the missed field goals, the punt returns
by
DuVernay. Right. And then this flip in situational problems where fourth down situational crises for the Bears go away and turn the other way because of the 4th and 8. and get replaced by the Packers late game, let's go out of bounds situational mistakes.
Would you fire LaFleur? It sounds this morning like they're not.
No, they're not going to. And I would not do it. Although if they want to fire him, then the Eagles could hire him in some capacity.
No, he would definitely get a head job somewhere.
He would get a head job. So we could, something.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying the only way I would fire LaFleur is if you knew you could get Harbaugh.
Right.
And you said, okay, these two guys are both pretty good coaches. We need a change of scenery a little bit. But other than that, no one you replace LaFleur with is going to be better than LaFleur.
Right. And I start to wonder, we got to get rid of the guy who loses in the playoffs and replace him with the guy who
loses in the playoffs. Right. Either that, or you can replace him with Kevin Stefanski, I guess.
With the MVP caliber quarterback instead of like the sort of Pro Bowl-ish caliber quarterback. Hmm.
Meanwhile, the Bears next week will play the Rams. So that's our first, was the first game of the weekend. Rams 34, Panthers 31. Rams with a 79% post-game win expectancy. But this was not like the first Rams-Panthers game. No. This was definitely closer than the weird fourth downs and stuff in that first game where the Rams really dominated on offense but turned over the ball and then the weird fourth downs. And this was much better. I don't know why the Rams were not using the 13 personnel in this game.
They were at the beginning.
I feel like they outthought themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, they were at the beginning, early on, when they were just driving down the field. They were,
and then they totally moved away from it, and the offense stagnated, and then they brought it back at the end, and the offense did well again. The Panthers were bad against tight ends this year, and the Rams were so good in that personnel. It's like they felt like, oh, we have Devontae Adams back. We got to get more wide receivers on the field. But the 13 worked, and it specifically works against this defense. They outthought themselves.
And it would be a great tactic when it's really windy, which it was, and when your quarterback's index finger is like the size of a knockwurst, which it probably was for much of that game, and yet they abandoned it. It felt like the Rams got themselves into a game and had a little panic attack and like, let's blow the doors off of these guys by throwing the ball a million times, when they should have just been like, oh, we're in a game, but we're better. And let's just run the ball and like get control of things again.
I want to give props to Colby Parkinson for his incredible ball control, body control on that final touchdown. And Michael Jackson, who had a really good game, like the game of his life, even if it was a loss.
He's like the playoff Lenny of cornerbacks, where when a big game comes up, Jackson is out there and he's getting interceptions and looking like Ronnie Lott. And then in some routine game against the Saints, like he gives up like three touchdowns.
Stafford was definitely more inaccurate after the hand injury. So we'll have to see what happens during the week. And as you point out in walkthrough today, it is supposed to be in the teens in Chicago next week. And we don't know yet. We don't know yet whether that's the 3 o'clock game or the 6:30 game. If that's the 6:30 game, it's even colder. I'm guessing that it will be, because if I am the networks, I want the Chicago and Los Angeles markets as close to prime time as possible.
Yeah, it makes sense. That makes sense. That will be icy, and I'll have a hard time having any faith in the Rams under those
circumstances. Yeah, I feel a lot better about a Bear. I mean, this is, you know, small preview of wild card weekend, of a divisional weekend. I feel a lot better about the Bears than I do about the 49ers next week.
And I have one other question is, I don't know how the Rams are handling this week. Are they going back to Los Angeles and going up, or are they
finding... As I know, they are going back to Los Angeles because they couldn't, they didn't know where they were going.
That's true.
They didn't know where they were going. You know, it's not like the far East Coast, right? That the flight to Chicago is less. So they're going to go home and then they'll come back out to Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm keeping an eye on that.
All right, here is a look at weighted DVOA adjusted for week 18. This is the final nine teams.
Okay.
Pittsburgh is the lowest.
Okay.
Then Denver.
Okay.
Remember, they look better than they really are because they played Trey Lance in week 18.
Good point.
Then Chicago. Then Buffalo.
Yeah, they're rising. Go ahead.
Buffalo's a little lower than you might think. But yes. We're all feeling like the Josh Allen factor makes them extra dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then San Francisco. Then Houston, number four.
We'll see tonight. We'll see how that goes.
Then New England, third.
Oh, boy. Here
then the gap. Then the Rams are now below the Seahawks.
And that feels right. But again, I feel like
after that game, like the Rams should drop a little bit.
But I feel like LA Rams are one, and then like road Rams, no matter what, are like
eight, five or six.
Yeah, five or six or somewhere down in the pack, certainly.
Right. But there's no, very likely no, a home game unless San Francisco and the Rams both win. The Rams right. will be on the road. If they win, they'll be on the road in Seattle unless San Francisco wins too. So
that's right. Very unlikely scenario though.
Texans and Steelers tonight.
Yes. Yes.
The surprising stat, the Texans passing game by DVOA since week 10 is ninth.
Ninth? Really?
Ninth.
Ninth.
Yes.
Is week 10, does that have some Davis Mills in it too?
I think it does have a little bit of Davis Mills.
It has a little Davis Mills in it too. Okay.
Stroud on deep passes before week 10, 9.4 yards per attempt.
Okay.
Stroud on deep passes since 12.6.
Phenomenal.
Wow. Yards per attempt. The Steelers have only allowed 39 deep passes since week 10, which is the second lowest in the NFL, and that does not involve a bye week. Mm-hmm. But when they do allow a deep pass, they have the worst defensive DVOA in the league, allowing 56% completion rate. So when Stroud's offensive line actually lets him go deep, he is going to hit.
Right. And they will scheme for that. You'll get like some max protect to try and get those shots downfield. Is a reconfigured secondary. You know, Asante Samuel's out there now, but the numbers, Samuel's been out there for weeks, and the numbers suggest this is what's going on.
Another thing I wrote down is the Texans are third in DVOA against running backs as receivers, which is they love the Kenneth Gainwell. Steelers love the Kenneth Gainwell.
Yes.
But if you look at coverage DVOA, the weakness is Henry To'o.
All right.
If they get Gainwell on To'o, you can go there and you can get some plays.
I think that they try to use Al Shazier as the Al-Shaair is the main.
Yes, Al-Shaair was much better in coverage this year.
Right. So it feels like To'o, if he's out there, that means you have really manipulated things. But if the entire system is designed, and it could be designed to, we got to get Gainwell against To'o. That means everything else that the Steelers are trying to do has kind of gone the pot.
And I think that's how this game, look, the Texans defense is so good on every level.
Yes.
Right? Al-Shaair was very good this year.
Yes.
Stingley and Laster are the top two outside corners in the league. Yes. It's the best outside corner combo.
Yes.
Right? Cooper DeJean and Mitchell might be a better corner combo, but this is the best outside corner combo.
Right.
Fantastic pass rush.
Yes.
I mean, anything happens in the NFL and Rodgers is a wise man. I just don't see it. The Steelers defense is not good enough to right. keep the Texans offense down to the same extent that the Texans defense should keep the Steelers offense down.
Right. And that's the thing. The Steelers victory looks like a Tomlin special, 15-10, five Boswell field goals, three of them 55 yarders. That's the only way that looks. What I anticipate is the Texans doing to the Steelers what the Patriots just did to the Chargers.
Yeah. I see it much more like a 27-10.
Okay. Yeah.
The Steelers, a couple other stats I wrote down, they want to do a lot of two tight end sets, but they actually were not good for them.
Okay.
13% DVOA from 11, minus 13% from 12. Missing Darnell Washington.
It's a cover-up strategy for them. It's like, we don't have anything else, so we're doing this. I know Smith likes it, but like two tight ends in the sixth offensive line, it's not what the Rams are doing, where it's like, well, this opens up our offense. This is like, protect Rodgers at all costs, create those weird little yak plays, and get what you get. It's not optimized.
Also, if I'm the Steelers, I'm trying to run.
Yeah.
And if I'm the Texans, I'm just giving up on the run. Their running game is bad.
No Woody Marks for you?
Steelers' running game was good. The Steelers' run defense was good. Don't run. The second half of the year, the Steelers' run defense was much better than the first half of the year. Right. Don't run.
Right. Well, you got to do something to get the play action going, but you don't really need to establish the run to play action.
So. Big Cheese wants to know if I have stats for 13 personnel. Not handy, and it doesn't matter because Washington is not healthy.
Washington's not healthy. It's tricky trying to parse them for the Steelers because they'll go two tight ends and a sixth lineman, too. I tried doing it a couple weeks ago.
Right. The line tonight is Texans minus three. The system basically has no pick. Going Texans.
I would go Texans. And where's the over-under? Wait. Let me try and pull it up. If it's anywhere near 40, I'd go under. And it is down at 38.5. That's a no pick for me on the over-under.
Yeah, that's pretty low over-under.
Right.
Because like, I could see it being like 27 to 10.
Right.
And you're 27 to 13.
Right. You're right
about there.
Yeah. I don't like it.
But I think the Texans are a better team. I mean, I'll say this much as a Patriots fan.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, please give us the Steelers.
Right.
Please give us the Steelers. Please give the Patriots the Steelers.
Yeah, you just try and tee off on Rodgers and like find the weak spots in the secondary and get that win. Not, toe-to-toe personnel-wise, this defense is an unbelievable problem.
I mean, the best path for the Patriots would be the Steelers. The Broncos. Bills to upset the Broncos, although the Bills are actually favored. The Bills are favored by 1.5.
Are favored.
Bills to beat the Broncos, which means the Patriots then host the AFC Championship game and still don't have to play a top defense.
Still don't have to play
until you get to the Super Bowl and you get to probably the Seahawks or Rams.
Or you get the Broncos defense and then it's Captain Schedule Merchant versus Captain Schedule Merchant Jr.
Well, that's kind of true because the fact is the Patriots schedule was historically easy. But both the Broncos and the Bills had easy schedules.
Easy schedules. As did the Bears in the first half of the league, although they've really run a pretty solid gauntlet over the last
seven or eight weeks.
Yeah.
All right. That does it for today. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thank you for listening. As always, rate the show, give us stars, tell your friends, comment. We will be back Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern in order to preview these games a little closer, especially once we know what the fourth one will be. Everybody, enjoy Monday Night Football tonight. For Mike Tenier, I am Aaron Schatz. So long, everybody.